The following Dharma talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This quote is from one of the great teachers, layman Vimalakirti. Because he was sick, bodhisattvas came to his 10x10 living room and he debated the Dharma with him. And as you may know, his sick room magically expands to accommodate a vast assembly of 35,000 lay people, arhats, brahmins, bodhisattvas, various devas, other non-human beings, all have come to watch. And I guess we could think of that as happening now. And can you imagine you at home who think you're sitting alone? There's actually 35,000, which means a lot of other beings in your Buddha field. And I remember Daido, one time he officiated and he came into the Dokusan room afterwards. I was in there. And he said, "Did you see all those beings in the Zendo this morning at service?" And I thought he meant the residents. And he said, "Every time I go to the altar, it's so crowded. There's so many bodhisattvas as I go up to the altar that I can hardly get through." Very interesting. So at one point, and these are all kind of reluctant bodhisattvas because Vimalakirti's really good at Dharma encounter, so they're kind of reluctant to go to him. And at one point, Manjushri asked Vimalakirti, "Why are you sick?" And he said, "Because the world is sick, I am sick. Because people suffer, I have to suffer." So today I wanted to be in touch with Bodhisattva Jizo. The qualities in us that makes us able to reach into the most terrible places of darkness and oppression, the qualities that make it possible for us to walk into the hell realm. And at first, it might seem like Jizo's outside, just a legendary personality. But as we begin to work with these bodhisattvas, we see that it's us. It's in you, it's in me, these qualities. It's in many others, everywhere. Vimalakirti then offers this teaching. Insofar as apparent objects are perceived, they are the basis of sickness. What things are perceived as objects? What is the thorough understanding of the basic apparent object? It is non-perception, as not objects exist ultimately. Not understanding this is the source of our sickness, yet Vimalakirti is himself sick, which is why everyone's in the living room in the first place. What is he sick with? The sickness of all beings. And what is their sickness? There is no sickness. That's the sickness. There is no sickness. So we're expanded once again in this sutra and brought back to form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness exactly form. Perception is exactly non-perception. So this is the spirit and the intention of Jizo. Bodhisattva going into the six realms, to help suffering beings who are sick. And this is what we can get in touch with. And every time I started to say I was going to write about Jizo marching into hell, of course, the Man of La Mancha comes up, the impossible dream. I'm sorry if I plant this into your brain for the rest of the session, but it goes, this is my quest to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest, and the world will be better for this. And isn't that what we're able to do and what we're training to do? And maybe this is why Zen is not high on the fun to-do list. But for those who do turn to the Dharma, we see it's what we're able to do. And I remember early in practice, my mother said, so what are you doing at that place? That place. I said, breathing. And whoa, like just seeing how much I'm suffering, people are suffering, how I create suffering. And she said, why do you want to see all that? And I said, good question, Mom. Good question. I didn't really know at that point. It was a little like, I don't know if I want to see all that, but it's what I'm hanging in with. And I read this Rumi poem, which I think helps set the tone of aligning with this Jizo spirit or vow. And I brought in a couple poems since we're working with art practice and this expressing the ineffable, what we can't grasp. I brought in a couple poems to show how we can be pointed to something in a very free way, left with something without the words. Rumi says, in pain I breathe easier. The scared child is running from the house screaming. I hear the gentleness under 9 layers of illusion. Whatever the light on the face of any object, in the grounded self, I see your face. And that's our practice right there. In pain, I breathe easier. The scared child is running from the house screaming. I hear the gentleness under the 9 layers of illusion. Whatever the light on the face of any object, in the grounded self, I see your face. And we hear this word practice a lot, right? Practice. This attending to again and again, to train in, to learn, to become more free and spontaneous, to form a commitment with a discipline so we can meet the complications and the confusion of our mind with a chance to not perpetuate it. And then we accompany that, if we can, with our warmth, with our intelligence. And over time, we tame the heart and the mind to become more natural, natural and integrated, merged. It's a coming down to earth and working through all our images of who we think we should be. You know, in clay, when you're learning to throw on the wheel, they say, everyone kind of knows this, that it takes at least 7 years to experience how to center. At least 7. So that any given lump of clay, no matter its character, You can relate to it. You can center it. You know what the feeling is. You've practiced it enough that it's just in you. It's natural. It comes naturally. And of course, many of the arts have that, you know, like, you know, when someone's learning to paint bamboo in that Chinese book of painting, it's 7 years of painting bamboo. I don't know what seven seems to be the number. 7 years of painting bamboo again and again and every season, so that you just know, like, if the wind's blowing and it's what kind of the bamboo would look like, or if it's raining, what kind of what would the bamboo look like? And you just know this. You feel this. I remember Daido saying he used to copy Minor White to learn how he used values, to learn his system until he could find his own way, which is, in practice, we need a lineage, we need teachings. We practice Zazen, something very vast and quite particular at the same time. We practice silence, we practice joy, deep listening, non-harming, living by the precepts. It's a practice life. And I remember we used to wedge at the table for, you know, you sign up for a pottery class and already you're like seeing your dishes and the nice glaze and people like wanting to buy it. And then as soon as you start wedging, poof, it takes so long. You'd think that just like aligning your clay would be like, what's the problem? There's a lot of problems that come up. That's what we have to work through. And you know, you start out and everyone's giggling and happy, and then the next week we come to class and everyone's like, okay, when are we gonna get on the wheel? Next week, this sucks. I don't know if I wanna be in this class anymore. Next week, there's a few less people. And then you just practice it. You just keep staying with it, go through many failures and mistakes and learn. So Jizo, Bodhisattva is the name that was given in Japan, in China, Dzong, in Sanskrit, Kshitagarbha, and it translates as womb of the earth, earth matrix, earth womb, earth storehouse. So in many ways, Jizo relates to the ground, to our earth, the Jizo house. And to say what we mean by bodhisattva, I'll just say, bodhisattva is you and me. That's what we mean. It's a being who has taken a vow that they will not completely take their own freedom or enter nirvana until all living beings have entered before them, before us. They stay, we stay, we don't abandon anyone, and we will want to assist all living beings. So Jizos work hard, eh? Jizos work hard. I think the paramita of effort is probably one of the most characteristic of Jizo. Enthusiasm, joyful effort, vitality. And one of the most famous instructions for the Bodhisattva was written by Shantideva, the Indian saint from the 8th century, in his Bodhisattva's Way of Life. He says, "For all those ailing in the world, until their every sickness has been healed, may I become for them the doctor, nurse, and medicine itself." And I learned to chant this at Great Vow, and I like their translation, which is, may I become doctor, nurse, and medicine for sick beings in the world. May food and drink descend, ending thirst and hunger. May I be the medicine they need until everyone is healed. So, how do we become this medicine? We know, because everyone here, everyone has become medicine at some point. For a turtle, a dog, a rabbit, a friend, a stranger, or yourselves. We have also all received medicine, sometimes very unexpectedly, from animals, from things, from people, strangers. I remember Dido's dog Lobo. I had poison ivy all over my face. It was kind of unrecognizable. And Dido was showing one of his training videos, which means a movie, at his house. And Lobo wasn't really a people licker, you know. Lobo didn't really go around and just meotai mostly. And I was laying on the floor because I just wanted to be there with cold washcloths on my face. And all of a sudden, I felt this sensation in my foot and up my leg. And it was Lobo who went and licked me all over. And Dido said, I've never seen Lobo do that. But I felt so healed. I felt so taken care of. And I remember another unexpected time on a subway. I didn't know, I was in a very complicated state, very upset. And I didn't realize it was the Super Bowl and that the subways were going to be packed. I was in some, I don't know, some, why didn't I know it was the Super Bowl? I don't know, I'm in New York. So I get on the subway and I'm just like mashed, and I started to get panicky, which I never really did before. I was getting like a panic attack kind of thing. And I could feel like sweaty, and I thought, uh-oh, I'm going. All of a sudden I hear this voice say, you okay? And I just kind of look around, and there's this girl hanging on the pole next to me, and she says, stay with me. I see you. I'll bring you through. Don't worry. And that was it. I just stayed with her. I didn't even know her, but she saw something in that moment, and she did bring me through. And she said, you okay now? Before I got off. So we know this. It's not magical. This arising of the urge to be medicine. We know it's not something far away. It's moment to moment. It's our nature to be this medicine. And, you know, when I read the news, sometimes I just want to cry. I just want to cry. You know, so it's important to balance that, take sips and doses. You just feel this impulse to become medicine, right? Why does this have to happen, right? The rising up is called bodhicitta, which Shantideva praises for verses and verses and verses. He's got, like, the rest of the book is praising bodhicitta. This rising up is what's so important. Letting this rise up, this energy bodhicitta that rises up and supports the way of the bodhisattva. In fact, it is the bodhisattva. The bodhisattva is bodhicitta. Bodhicitta, that rising, which you know, the intention that we have to understand our lives, to attain liberation for the sake of beings throughout space and time. So we're reading this book on the 37 verses of on the practices of the Bodhisattva. And if you have Dilgo Khyentse's translation, in the intro is about the life of Gyaltso Thogme, who wrote the 37 practices. He's from 1295 to 1369. So Dogen died in 1253. So he's after Dogen, 1295. And this is the story of little Gyaltse and his bodhicitta. As soon as Gyaltse learned to speak, it became evident how full of compassion he was. One day he sat on his mother's lap and he saw a leaf whirled up into the air by the wind, and he began to cry intensely. "Why are you crying?" asked his mother. He pointed a finger at the disappearing leaf and said, "An animal has been carried off into the sky." And we see little kids, right? We were that too, of course. Like, you know, a spider with a broken leg, and they'll get it. And, you know, just some just really have this impulse. On another occasion, after he began to walk, he went outside and returned only a few minutes later, naked, to the great surprise of his mother. "What have you done with your clothes?" she asked. "There was someone out there who was feeling cold," he replied. She stepped outside to see who it was and saw her son had put his clothing over a frost-covered bush. Stones had carefully been placed on the corners to keep the coat from flying off. When he played games with his friends, he never minded losing. He felt sad for others, rather than he. As a game, he used to make little stupas and make believe he was receiving teachings or giving himself a teaching. That's what we should do, eh? Make little stupas. In short, like all great beings, he suffered more than the others when they themselves suffered, and he felt happier than others when they were happy. Bodhicitta, a very highly developed form of compassion and the actual practice that we train in. This is considered the definition of bodhicitta in the relative world. Bodhicitta in the absolute is sunyata, or emptiness. And we come upon that word often, sunyata, often translated as emptiness, which often sounds like a vacancy, especially when we're just starting out. Like, emptiness feels like an empty trash can, like it's vacant. There's a loss, an empty something. Thich Nhat Hanh wrote on the Heart Sutra, "It's not emptiness, it's fullness. I think it's interdependence, or that quality where there's nothing separate. Empty means empty of a separate self." Kant's reports, the etymology of sunya refers to "that looks like a lot, but it's really nothing." That's my favorite. "That looks like a lot, but it's really nothing." So just about everything we see looks like a lot, but it's really nothing. So maybe we can say that to ourselves when something's really got us by the... "It looks like a lot, but it's really nothing." And when the scholars started to translate that, they used the word empty, as Shugen was saying yesterday, to emphasize no own being, right? And also emphasizing it's a real experience. It's a real experience. And don't think you haven't touched it. There's a Tibetan yogi, you may know him, Shagbar, from the 1800s, who I think characterizes emptiness beautifully, talking about the relative and absolute aspects not being separate, and how we have to separate things to talk about them, but they aren't so. And this can seem confusing, right? He says, the mind nature is vivid as a flawless piece of crystal, intrinsically empty, naturally radiant, ceaselessly responsive. And when I read that, I felt a little recognition, like, oh yes. And then liturgy, that's what liturgy does. It taps that, oh yes, right? The heart says, oh yes. So we're working with these words, bodhisattva, bodhicitta, to describe our heart and mind. And in art practice, we're working with that, reading words. You should grasp the great reality and then let that pour out of us. Don't let that stop us. Let that expression just go. So these words are not a description of a being that's special, like Jesus, who is dead and we never got to meet. Somebody who has special powers and will never be like that. Mm-mm. No, it's not like that. It's in complete touch with the living reality of who we are. So when we were doing the art practice the other morning, when we started off and we all did it together as residents, and I read something about Jizo, and I said, pick a word. So the word I had was need. That's the word that stood out for me that morning, need. So I had a crayon. And so I took need up, and I felt my need was just like, great. I was wailing with that need. I was just like, you know, feeling all kinds of needs and just letting need go, right? And then I looked over at Kian across the table, who had these like glue stick, lipstick-like things. I said, what's that? And he said, it's a soft crayon. I said, can I? So he gave me a soft crayon, and I took need in again, and I started, and it was soft, and I just went whoosh, right off the paper. And so I came back on and I started to work with the soft crown, and I thought, it was a different need. The need was gentle. It was a softer need. So as you work with these different mediums to match the feeling, you know, explore that, you know, when the need is that way and then what a softer material does to that same feeling could be interesting. And then see how the mind will come in later after we look, if you had your eyes closed. What's that? Oh my God, I'm not going to show that to anyone, you know. And it comes in later, and it kind of undoes that impulse, that creative impulse. So just stay with the body and let that go. Just allow it. We have Zazen to return to for that openness. Drop in and to feel how we're already in touch. You know, if we can drop into the body and we see how the mind puts us sometimes out of touch with its critique, with its judgment, we lose touch. So back to the earth, touched by air, touched by sensations, hearing, smelling, tasting. This is a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye, a Palestinian-American woman from her book of Words Under Words. It's a poem called Kindness, which touches the Bodhisattva energy. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things, feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt and weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go. So you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness, how you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop, the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with a plan and a simple breath and kept him alive. That kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak it until your voice catches the thread of sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then and only kindness that makes sense anymore. It is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is you I have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. When I was reading that, I remembered a night in Hermitage where I had it was later on, so this I set myself like up in a box so I can just sit up and sit through the night. And the morning came, and then that night, I was really sick. I got really sick. It was an extraordinary sickness in my body that evening. And I was sitting and then lying and just doing body work, and I could hardly sit zazen. And I remember these images of harming coming up into my mind. Brutal things came into my heart and mind. And I had my hand on my chest and my stomach, and I said, "There's only two things to do right now. I love you and thank you." That was all. That was all there was to say. So Jizo liberates those who dwell in hell rooms, and especially takes care of children who have died and the women who have lost them. They carry a staff top with six rings to signify the realms of existence. And they also carry this jewel called the Sintamani, the wish-fulfilling gem, which illuminates the hells and calms the sufferings of its inhabitants. So if you're feeling like you're in a hell realm, stick a jewel in your pocket. The six realms is our life. We transmigrate from realm to realm, round and round, all day long. I mean, just look from morning till now. How many realms have you been in? And this is the realms through which Jizo moves and is the shifting fabric of our life. The hell realm, the hungry ghost, the animal realm, the human realm, fighting God realms, the heavenly realms. Just keep moving from moment to moment, realm to realm. And we notice this is a ride. This is not cutting it. I'm still miserable. I've gone through every realm and none of them are working out. So in our practice life, we sit down, we calm down, we stop, we look, that's mindfulness, and we do this for a while. for a while, like training for a marathon. And then we get some energy, concentration deepens, it develops. The ability to stay with whatever's coming. We can be still, we can feel it, and we can see things for what they are. And when we do that, that's how we practice with it. As a bodhisattva, having seen through the illusion of self, we can be without fear. When we can see that as we're practicing, we can be without fear. No territory called mine to defend. Whew. Some of that's rough, right? Especially as we go on sometimes. Chosen in her book on Jesus wrote, "When the self is seen as empty, that is, simply an ever-changing process with no thing at its heart, then there's nothing to defend and nothing to fear." And that's how, Jizo, you can walk into hell, into that realm, into the suffering. That's what helps, is to realize this more clearly, to go beyond our conceptions, our ideas. That's what breaks, really, the ideas. So we can have that direct experience. The Buddha said, "I teach only one thing, suffering and the transformation of suffering." That's all he taught. He didn't say, "I'm teaching you how to escape your life and get a better deal." That's not what Buddha said. How many of us would have stayed? Maybe. "I'm teaching you how to escape your life and get a better deal. Sign me up." Thich Nhat Hanh says, "Suffering is the means by which we become free." He instructs us to embrace our suffering, to cherish it with kindness and compassion, and to look deeply into it. So, how do we get to do this work of touching directly? We're in it. Sesshin, continuous thread, to practice in a more clarified container, a more earnest container, a less distracted container. Many of you spoke of that at home, how you're working that to create that. Even at work, a less distracted container at work, some of you spoke of. Whether we're practicing at home or here, we learn by our direct experience. And I think that's really good that the Buddha said, to test this for ourselves. I don't know if this is a cultural thing, but you know, we're filled with a lot of rebelliousness, like, don't tell me what to do, right? So Buddha says, no, I'm not gonna do that. You go test it. I'm not gonna tell you what to do. I'll tell you what I've seen and what has worked and set me free, but you test it. So I think we're lucky for that. So we return again and again. I spoke in the intro to the continuous thread, allowing mindfulness and then awareness to be an ally. And concentration isn't something we need to figure out. It happens this way. When we do that, when we're mindful, aware, return, it happens. Concentration develops. Awareness is cultivated. And then with that, we can touch the raw material. Just for a moment, turn and face the raw material. That's all. We don't have to explain it. We don't run away. And the battle stops. And we're just, when we have that moment, that space, we touch this whole big universe that we are. Just a moment, maybe. And that's the functioning of wisdom. That's prajna operating right there. Everyone has in this room has wisdom. Prajna is before we know. Before we know. It's not something out in the ether. You know it. And when this happens over and over, there's a momentum. A momentum as we experience directly, and that builds that faith, that trust to continue. And we must continue. That's what we must do. It's to continue as best as we can. Chosen writes, anything we observe with a quiet mind, meticulously and deeply, will open and reveal the truth to us. Is that your experience? I would say that's true. And what we find out is we can bear what we might have thought before was impossible. We can bear witness. And that bearing witness isn't fancy. It's not like you arrive on like a horse with a wand or something. We don't push away or grasp what arises. We do this very disciplined thing. And we learn that we can be present with what we imagined was not possible and see it's possible. And if it's possible, then who are we? This is the practice of the Bodhisattva. And this last poem is by Elliot Figman called The Tunnel. I read it to the art practice group from a piece called Big Spring. I think he's got it exactly right in this poem. Tunnel, the tunnel. If you dig down deep enough and lose the world of light and let yourself descend in the thick tunnel of air and forget what it was like to learn the outline of a hill or breast, if you allow the pressure of the narrowing walls down where you must wedge in out of sight and settle in the damp cusp, the first home, the air which stinks of grease, and read what's written on the tunnel wall and cannot find your name. If you dig where there is no grip, no face, neither friend nor foe, where the bones which once knew the logic of your chest scatter like thrown sticks, there you'll wait for the good push, the fierce act that gives you up and sets the tunnel aflame. I like that. I think he's spot on. So what makes it possible for us to do this, to march into hell? It's not strength. It's not skill, necessarily, not even grace. What I understand as making it possible for us to go into hell is for the love of life. Completely free of our idea of love, but the inconceivable love which bodhicitta speaks of. And realizing this love in ourselves, in our marrow, and realize it's never gone from us. This is who we are, and it's available completely to everyone, whether they practice anything or not. That's why we don't give up. Whether they practice anything or not, it's there. This is how it is. So, for the love of life, let that be the guide for your actions, for all your actions. To look for ourselves is the medicine. But we have to take the medicine to work it in our own body. And if we see through the delusion, we will recover. An idea of hell will make it hell. What happens when we're just there? Is it hell or not? Can we surrender our explanations and just attend to the rawness and see how the heart melts all on its own? See how clear seeing arises all by itself. We don't arise them. It just happens when we go there. It just happens when we go there. There's nothing that is not medicine, that is not a place of healing, if we can be awake to it. As Unman says, medicine and sickness heal each other. Medicine and sickness heal each other. All the world subdue each other. All the world is medicine. Where do you find yourself? I think that's the most important question. Where do we find the self? That's the Jizo realm we're in. That's the earth womb we're in. And joy and perseverance really help. Daito Roshi wrote, "It's a beautiful life, an unlimited life, and every single one of us is born into it, lives in it, and dies from it. Yet we're free all the way. There isn't a single moment that we're not free. But you can't use this freedom until you realize it, until you make it yours. Nobody else can do the job for you. That is why it's important to go very deep into your sitting. It's there that you're going to find the key, the strength, the power to take care of your life. It's no small thing." So, it's a great gift that we can join together in community to practice this astounding and demanding practice, which is why we need each other, because this is demanding. So remember who you are, willing to march into hell. That's the key point, willingly. We need you. I need you. We need every being. Yeah. And maybe every is the hard part.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.